is our intent to express the fact that we are a community, as other communities that exist within the mosaic of Jerusalem life.
The Jewish population in Jerusalem is so busy with the Palestinian-Israeli conflict that I don't think that they will be violent against a group of gay and lesbians.
We always had the courage and belief and faith that what we're doing is the right thing.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Eurocourt rebuffs French gays' adoption quest, Rosie's coming out fueled by Florida's rejection, and amidst bitter conflict, Jerusalem activists debate a dramatic pride decision. Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Brian Nunes.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending March 2, 2002. A panel of the European Court of Human Rights this week narrowly upheld French authorities' refusal to allow a gay man to adopt a child. 4 of the 7 European justices found that the European Convention on Human Rights did not guarantee, as such, the right to adopt, and so rejected gay plaintiff Philippe Freté's discrimination claim. The majority ruling said that professional as well as political opinions are divided on the issue of gays and lesbians raising children, and that nations must be allowed some leeway in considering children's welfare under local conditions. The minority, comprised of justices from Austria, Belgium, and Britain, sharply dissented. They wrote that Mr. Freté's homosexuality cannot justify the refusal of consent unless it is accompanied by behavior detrimental to a child's upbringing. French law does not explicitly deny adoptions by gays and lesbians or other unmarried adults. Social services gave a favorable evaluation to Parisian teacher Freté, and he even won a round in court. The European Court did find unanimously that Freté's right to a fair trial had been violated when he was not advised of the hearing by France's highest administrative court that set aside his favorable decision and awarded him 3,000 francs in court costs, but did not order a new trial. Freté can still appeal to the Eurocourt's full 17-member bench.
Taking aim at Florida's ban on adoptions by gays and lesbians is U.S. TV talk show host Rosie O'Donnell. An adoptive parent and vocal adoptions advocate, O'Donnell unequivocally identified herself as a lesbian in a stand-up routine at an Ovarian Cancer Research Fund benefit in New York City this week, proclaiming, "I'm a dyke." More formal and detailed coming-out messages are expected from O'Donnell in TV interviews airing this month and a book to be released in April as she leaves her hit talk show in May. O'Donnell also maintains a home in Florida, where she's committed to joining the American Civil Liberties Union in its efforts to overturn the state's adoption ban. At the taping of one TV interview, she described parenting a troubled 3-year-old and learning that to adopt her in Florida, she would have to sign a statement that she was not bisexual or homosexual. The child was taken away when she refused to do so.
A lesbian non-biological co-parent in Cumberland County, Pennsylvania, has been ordered to pay child support for the 5 children of her former partner. After several years of living together, Lisa Cove and Helen Naumoff decided together to have children by artificial insemination. Cove bore their first child in 1990, and then in 1993 gave birth to quadruplets. When they separated in 1997, Naumoff was awarded joint legal custody and partial physical custody. Cove first sued for child support in 1998, but only prevailed this week. A recent Pennsylvania State Supreme Court decision in another case recognized that a lesbian non-biological co-parent is a parent under state law with standing to sue for visitation.
Also in Pennsylvania this week, the Erie County Council voted 6-1 to prohibit discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity in housing, employment, and public accommodations. The county executive is expected to sign the bill into law, making Erie the state's 6th locality to protect the civil rights of gays, lesbians, and bisexuals, and the 2nd to protect transgenders.
Gay and lesbian civil rights also came up for consideration at the national level in the U.S. this week, as the Senate Committee on Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions held a hearing on ENDA, the Employment Non-Discrimination Act. Committee Chair Ted Kennedy of Massachusetts is once again a lead sponsor of the measure, and with his Democratic Party now in control of the Senate, he expects the bill to reach a floor vote soon. In the only previous floor vote in either house in some 30 years of gay and lesbian civil rights proposals, ENDA failed by a single vote in the Senate in 1996, on the same day that the anti-gay so-called Defense of Marriage Act was overwhelmingly approved. To counter opponents who claim that ENDA would damage business interests, there was testimony at this week's committee hearing from representatives of several of the 29 major U.S. corporations which have endorsed the bill. A Gallup poll last year found 85% public support for federal protections from sexual orientation discrimination in private sector employment, but the Republican committee members were notably absent from the hearing.
Britain's Conservative Party leader Ian Duncan Smith this week held the first in what's planned to be a series of meetings with the group Torch, Tory Campaign for Homosexual Equality. The Tories' traditional anti-gay positions have recently come up for increasingly vocal criticism from within the party. Torch chair Andy Jennings said a key point of agreement between the group and Smith was that gay people in particular resented state interference in their lives, a central tenet of conservatism. Torch deputy chair James Davenport claimed that the Tories are now actually ahead of the ruling Labour Party on issues including partners' rights to hospital visitation and pensions.
The law creating Finland's new registered partnerships for gays and lesbians, conferring most of the legal benefits of marriage, went into effect this week. Dozens of couples had already applied to register, and a few hundred are expected to do so each year. Finnish partnerships carry property and inheritance rights, but not adoption or co-adoption rights, nor the right to use the same surname.
In Israel, Ariel Sharon this week became the nation's first prime minister to meet with a delegation from the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender community. Israeli President Moshe Katsav held a similar first-of-its-kind meeting in November. Both meetings were organized by the Political Council for Gay Rights in Israel. Delegates described the meeting as very friendly and quoted Sharon as saying, "I think everybody should live their lives as they choose to." He also denounced one rabbi's recent widely reported call for putting gays to death.
In Nigeria, a sodomy conviction was punished this week by a sentence of 100 strokes of a cane and 1 year in prison. Judge Alkali Dahiru Muhammad Gusau of the Higher Sharia Court in Kanwuri was careful to cite the specific section of the Islamic legal code that justified his sentencing of Abdullahim Abubakar Barkeji. Nigeria is sharply divided between its Islamic northern states and its Christian southern states.
Indian activists report there was a major police sweep on cruising areas in Hyderabad last week that resulted in 25 arrests. They say the detainees were forced to sit down in the street to be publicly humiliated while police verbally and physically abused them. Among those detained were five AIDS prevention outreach workers with the state-funded group Mithrudu, who were later released, although required to return for interrogation. At last report, the other detainees had neither been released nor brought before a magistrate.
In South Africa, Western Cape Premier and former Cape Town Mayor Peter Murray drew the ire of activists with anti-gay remarks. Asked in an interview with the magazine InSig if he would try to prohibit gay rights, Murray responded that, "The Lord always leads me. Look what the Lord did to the city of Sodom. He destroyed it." Previously, Murray had said of South Africa's pioneering constitutional guarantee of equal treatment for gays and lesbians that Christians must choose between the Constitution and the Bible. Both the ruling African National Congress and Murray's new national party, which recently established an agreement with each other, responded with affirmations of Murray's right to free speech, but no support for his statements. South Africa's Lesbian and Gay Equality Project targeted Murray for flip-flopping on the issue, noting that he had once called a homophobic Durban mayor green with envy at our Cape Town pink community, but that he now asserted that he will never push the Cape as a pink tourism city.
In Australia's pink tourism capital, Sydney's 24th annual Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras parade this week drew about 500,000 spectators, although international attendance was down. The theme of the 8,000-member march was Walk a Mile in Our Shoes.
The Leet float was a large model of the city's St. Mary's Cathedral entitled St. Muscle Mary's and a roast of the anti-gay positions of the Roman Catholic Church and its Australian leader, Archbishop George Pell. A Pell look-alike distributed condoms instead of communion wafers. Prime Minister John Howard and Immigration Minister Philip Ruddock were also satirized as the parade took on issues including immigration and Aboriginal reconciliation. Singer Lorna Luft rode on a float for the AIDS charity Oz Showbiz Cares, surrounded by some 50 impersonators of her mother, Judy Garland. There were 170 floats in all, one featuring a 10-foot-tall figure of children's TV puppet Bob the Builder wearing a nipple ring.
And finally, in Bob's home country, the British Academy of Film and Television Arts handed out its annual movie awards this week. An Academy Fellowship, BAFTA's highest honor, was presented to the gay team of producer Ismael Merchant and director James Ivory, along with their writer-collaborator Ruth Prar Jabala. Lord of the Rings was the big winner with 5 trophies, although its Gandalf, open gay Sir Ian McKellen, lost out to Russell Crowe for Best Actor. Openly gay actor-author Stephen Fry hosted the evening for a global television audience of 6 million. When actor Kevin Spacey came on stage to present an award, he remarked on the strange soapy substance the torrential rains had drawn from the red carpet outside the hall. Fry suggested it was the residue of years of greasy flattery.
That's News Wrap for the week ending March 2nd, 2002. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Brian Nunes.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
It was the lowercase Peter Del P, the one with the high first stroke, so the letter had a cap on it. I damn near had a trademark on this P. And here it was in a handwriting analysis book.
A young boy gets his first taste of internalized homophobia when he learns that his P's say something about his Q's later in the program. There isn't much peace in the city of Jerusalem, but there's a growing sense of pride within its gay and lesbian community. As This Way Out's Zoran Sicurel discovered, the burning issue at a recent community gathering was how it should express that pride in the midst of bitter conflict.
To march or not to march? The question about a Pride March in Jerusalem was at the center of the discussion in the last Open House Assembly, held on February 21st. The Open House is the gay and lesbian center of Jerusalem, located in the frequently bombed epicenter of Jerusalem. The final decision was to hold the event in June this year, although several Open House members expressed some concern about being able to have a peaceful event. If the event will be held as planned, it would be the first Pride March in one of the holiest cities to 3 monotheistic religions, and is sure to raise a lot of reservations from various groups in the city. Pride marches are not a new thing in Israel. The city of Tel Aviv, considered to be the San Francisco of the Middle East, has held an event that draws up to 80,000 participants every year for the past 5 years. The event in Tel Aviv looks a lot like events all across the Western world and enjoys the support of the city council. However, Jerusalem, the capital of Israel, only 45 minutes' drive from Tel Aviv, was always considered to be a different story, especially considering the ongoing violence between Palestinians and Israelis, with frequent suicide bombings on streets near the open house. Elena Canetti, an Open House board member, expressed some reservations about holding the event.
It will be very, very hard to convince people here in Jerusalem to come to a march because Jerusalem is a very, I would say, difficult city. It's a city of many contrasts. We have religious people, we have Arab population, we have very, very, very conservative population. We had highest right-wing supporters in Jerusalem, almost in all the country. The city is also a city that at the moment is undergoing a very difficult situation, also because of the political situation. We had many terrorist attacks We also have a very difficult economic situation. There is a lot of unemployment. Tourists don't come to visit the city anymore. Israelis from other parts of Israel don't come to visit the city anymore. Because of so many reasons, I was scared, I was afraid that only a few homosexuals and a few lesbians will go to this march, and most of the city will be against us, and we will not get enough support from homosexual and lesbian friends from other cities, and will be, I would say, just a small group of very weird people in a city that is unfriendly to homosexuals and lesbians.
Chagai Alad, the executive director of the Open House, believes the community is ready for the event.
I think it's a high time that the community in the city, after building its organizations and institutions over more than a decade, that we take it a step further, go beyond our inner walls and go beyond the walls of our institutions and into the street to demonstrate our pride.
Jerry Levinson, Open House chairperson, is happy about the decision, but also has concerns.
I'm still hesitant a bit about what this means for the community in Jerusalem, what kind of responses we'll get, how many people from the community and from friends of the community and supporters will actually participate in the march. But I'm happy that the decision was made. It was an overwhelming majority. None of us knew how the community here would respond to the issue itself.
We asked Elena, Chagai, and Jerry if they fear of any violence against the community because of the march.
I don't believe so, because I think that at the moment the Jewish population in Jerusalem is so busy with the Palestinian Israeli conflict, with the Palestinian Jewish conflict, that I don't think that they will take of their time to be violent against a group of gay and lesbians.
With all the violence that's taking place in Jerusalem today, I think we have to be concerned about that. On the other hand, I want to stress that, of course, Pride March here is not an act of provocation towards anyone. We're expressing, and the intent of the march, I believe, is our intent to express the fact that we are a community, as other communities that exist within the mosaic of Jerusalem ethnic and religious life. And we deserve equality and rights the same as any other community that exists here in Jerusalem. So we certainly fervently hope that there will not be any acts of violence, as there shouldn't be.
I think that the expectations of violence and such fears and inner suspicions have always been around. 5 years ago at the first Pride event, 3 years ago when the Open House opened, all these thoughts and all these remarks and fears have always been around, and we always had the internal courage and belief and faith that what we're doing is the right thing, and this is the right time to do it, and we can do it in an unprovocative way.
We asked Jerry Levinson whether he expects to have the support of the mayor of Jerusalem, Ehud Olmert, a right-wing leader with an openly gay daughter.
The mayor visited the Open House, as you know, just a few short months ago. His pronouncements then were very sympathetic, and we fully expect that the mayor will cooperate with us on making sure that this march is successful and peaceful, and another demonstration of the multi-ethnic and multicultural nature of Jerusalem society.
We asked Chagai if he expects to see any Palestinians in the march.
Absolutely. It's has been the policy of the Open House from its inception to be a Jerusalemite institution, and a third of the population in the city is Palestinian.
Jerry Levinson tells us more about running a gay center in the middle of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict.
Well, you're asking me it, of course, at a very difficult time. This country is at war, and it's a war that's tearing two nations apart, and we're here in the middle of it. So I can't just talk to you about how exciting it is that for the first time ever, for the last 3 years, the gay and lesbian, bi and trans community in Jerusalem has succeeded in establishing a place, a home of its own within the epicenter of this a torn and very multicultural and multi-ethnic community. And it is exhilarating to be able to be a part of this new venture. On the other hand, you hinted in your question, it is very difficult right now, particularly to be in the center of Jerusalem with the violence that is occurring on an almost daily basis here. And I very often find myself very worried about the staff of the open house who have witnessed, at least by earshot, various explosions that have taken place here in the center of town. It's scary. But it's scary to live in Jerusalem and in Israel and in Palestine, I suppose, now altogether. And this is just a part of life here that we all have to cope with and hopefully not despair that there will be a solution in the near future.
What is the outreach that the Open House does towards the Arab gay community?
Well, you saw tonight that for the second time we elected a Palestinian board member to the governing board of the Open House. And in addition, as you know, we now have for the first time a coordinator for the Palestinian community who is working very hard despite all the difficulties and the torn nature of Jerusalem at this point, to perform various outreach activities to the community. We're now translating many of our materials into Arabic, and they're being published in a variety of places and ways. And in addition, we will renew activities, social activities, for the Arab population. Unfortunately, right now, there is still only a trickle of Arabs and Palestinians coming to the open house because of the realities of the situation. We hope and are working very hard to change that as we see it tremendously important for us to aid and represent and support the Israeli Arab and Palestinian members of our community who suffer from tremendous oppression within their own communities.
Reporting from Jerusalem for This Way Out, I'm Eran Sikurel.
Hi, this is Terry Sweeney, and with me is Nancy Reagan. You know, whenever I'm home alone at the ranch and Ronnie's asleep, I listen to This Way Out. It's the only way out for me. Oh, so wonderful.
And finally this week, Peter Dell recalls a childhood brush with handwriting analysis that revealed a bit more than he wanted to know in Peter's Peas.
Everyone thought that Jamie Osich was gay. Jamie was effeminate naturally, something about the way he laughed, all high and girly, or the way he moved across a room like he was floating. All I know is that I hung around Jamie Osich because I always secretly hoped he would tell me he liked boys, because I would have told him then that I liked boys too. So we were in the library finishing up a project for some history class, or English class, or something. We finished early when we were both bored. I looked over at his Spanish homework. He had that big, loopy, very neat handwriting that only girls had, all soft and flowery and feminine. The only way it could have been any more queeny is if he had used little hearts to dot his I's. "You write like a girl," I told him. "Shut up," he said. "Let's go check it out," I said. "There's got to be a book in here about handwriting." We hunted the card catalog. Under the handwriting analysis subject cards, we came across several titles, all in the same Dewey Decimal neighborhood. I handed a book to Jamie and told him to find a sample of what his handwriting looked like while I searched another book. "Here," I said, "you do your B's like that. See there, on your homework. you'd be there and there and there. And it says, often associated with artists and dancers. I guess that is my bee, he said. I gloated. Then I saw it. The quintessential Peter Dell letter. The letter I had written differently from everyone else since I had first learned cursive. It was the lowercase Peter Dell P, the one with the high first stroke, so the letter had a cap on it. I damn near had a trademark on this P, and here it was in a handwriting analysis book. I was ecstatic. So ecstatic that I didn't read the caption. Jamie, look, this is my P. I always do my P's this way. This is crazy. I've never seen anyone else do their P's like this. He took the book. Then Jamie laughed. It was one of those deep belly laughs. I immediately knew I was in trouble. I guess that is your P, Peter, Jamie said between chuckles. I spun the book around. The caption read, "This example of the letter P is very common in men with homosexual tendencies." A gay P. A queer P. A faggot P. The English homework sitting on the table next to the book, my English homework, was littered with the gay P. Every word started with P now as I read my paper. One word with two P's in it. Each percussive principal consonant presumed that Peter was positively a pansy. I blushed a deep, angry red. "That book," I stumbled. It's old. That, it doesn't mean anything. It's all fake. I mean, really. Jamie just laughed. "How about this?" Jamie finally managed as his chortling died down. "Let's agree that you can't judge people on their handwriting. I don't have a girl's handwriting. There is no such thing. Just like you don't have a gay man's handwriting. Agreed?" I nodded my head furiously in agreement. The next day, I turned in my English assignment. The lowercase cursive P's on the paper I turned in were new to me, a foreign stroke with my pen. Generic little line with a half circle attached. To this day, my hand doesn't remember how to make that first P, that beautiful little twist of my wrist, which set me apart from Jamie Osich. And sometimes I want my P back, my charming, unique P, which was once very common in this man with homosexual tendencies.
That was Peter's Peas, written and read by Peter Dell and produced by John Beaupre and Steve Pride. Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, Brian Nunes, Graham Underhill, Jason Lynn, Chris Ambage, Rex Walkner, Iran Sicurel, and Steve Pride and John Beaupre contributed program material. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen to This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on Planet Out. Just point your browser to www.planetout.com and click first on Multimedia, then on Radio. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by direct charitable donations from our listeners around the world. To learn how you can help This Way Out stay on the air, please visit our website at thiswayout.org, email us at tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on WSUI Iowa City, Iowa, KBOO Portland, Oregon, 6RTR Perth, West Australia, and more than 125 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Do stay tuned.